You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to Community Connections. I'm Alan Collier, and it's my pleasure to be with you for the next 2 hours. And we've got interviews both between 12 and 1 now, and also between 1 and 2, or telling about what's going on in the local area. And, of course, being the second Wednesday of the month is our legal hour. And we have with us Con from Hutchinson Legal. Welcome, Con.
Yes, good morning, Alan.
And it's great to have you along.
Well, it's great to be back on the show. It's been a while.
That's terrific. Now, Con, we sent you away with, or Grant and those away with some question for you to bring back today. Did you get the answer on that?
Well, yes, I've got it's a bit long. I'll try and summarise it as best I can.
Yep.
So the first question was, if any of the numerous challenges to the law allowing COVID-19 fines, if they win the challenge, what does that mean for the fines already issued and fines already paid? Now, the legal position, as we understand it, is they are still valid fines because everybody sort of challenges them individually. It's more that media or public pressure might result in the government deciding to withdraw a large number of fines if they think that there's a problem that sort of infects all of them. But just because one person has a success on a challenge doesn't necessarily mean that all other fines of the same type will be withdrawn or removed, or that you can get a refund for it.
All right, So there's a possibility that if people want to challenge them, because the last I heard, there was only 4% of them being paid so far. So we're talking 96% that haven't been paid. So, I mean, I guess the next thing is, all right, so people either have to challenge it one by one, which is going to clog the courts up. The magistrates are going to love that. But more importantly, if they don't... if they don't challenge it, or if they do challenge it and it's deemed not valid, I guess the question was to how does the government or the legal system then work to recover those fines, please?
Yes, so that's the question about how are the fines managed, and do the amounts go up if people don't pay their fines? Well, that's right. The governments have been clever, generally speaking, to sort of link new laws into existing structures. So these fines are treated just like other fines when it comes to speeding fines, traffic fines. And these COVID fines, on-the-spot fines that are issued, that they get put into the same sort of process. So there's a set procedure. Usually you have 28 days to pay your fine, or you can request an extension of time, or you can dispute the fine if you think there's reasonable excuse or special circumstances, or you can go to court. Now, there's a sort of set number of stages where the fine increases. So normally if they send you a penalty reminder notice, fine goes up by $25, $25.80 to be precise. If they send us final demand, it goes up another $133. And if they issue a warrant, an enforcement warrant, it goes up by another $58. So, and of course, on top of that would be if it's taken to court, there could be court costs ordered as well.
So could wind up being very costly, couldn't it?
It could indeed, and that's always the... I've met a number of people who want to challenge a fine, but when you compare the cost of challenging it with the amount of the fine, sometimes you feel like you're innocent, but it's a cheaper option just to pay the fine and get over it. Now, with a very large fine, though, people might think, I'd rather spend some money to resist a $5,000 fine. But if it's a fine under $1,000, it's difficult to justify the cost of fighting it.
Clement, could I just ask one other question? Now, one person got fined 10 times in a week. So we're talking the fines of $16,000. The chance of them paying are probably very poor. Would they have to dispute every one of them singly at a different court case, or would the magistrate listen to those 10 all at once?
I think they would be all put together in aiming for efficiencies. As you say, with all of the online court things being done now, they're trying to clear up the backlog. So yes, they would be trying to deal with them all together. But trying to justify the withdrawal of any one in particular would sort of, you need to address each one, because presumably they've been incurred in different circumstances. But it might be that the magistrate says, well, I'll find you that you definitely have to pay one of them and I'll dismiss all the others.
Oh, right.
So it might be that sort of decision, one punishment for all five instead of five separate punishments.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough too. Con, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more with Con from Hutchison Legal.
Never thought.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
And welcome back to Community Connections. As Grant just said, this is The Legal Hour. And if you've got any questions you'd like answered, give us a ring on 59 615 991, 59 615 991, or shoot us an email, info@yarravalleyfm.org.au. Do it fairly quickly because we've only got up until 1 o'clock. So we've only got another, 27 minutes. Anyway, we have Con with me from Hutchison Legal. Con, we were talking. It's been a pretty stressful time for a lot of people, and of course, a lot of people are now under quite financial pressures. Some people have had their wages cut down because they're on JobKeeper and all those things, and also some people have put off their home loans. Now, those things are going to start back in. So what sort of advice have you got to people who are under financial pressure, Paz?
Yes, thanks, Alan. That's no doubt the financial pressures are, they've been sort of put on hold, but all of those sort of measures to put them on hold are going to come to an end, and that will increase dramatically the pressure. So you've got pressure with businesses not being able to operate, starting again, and landlords not being able to collect as much rent as they used to collect, and bank holidays, mortgage holidays, or deferments, with the interest still being added on in a lot of cases. So, yes, the people need to really take stock of whether they should be continuing to trade a business. If they're running it through a company, the government introduced laws, the federal government sort of put a moratorium on insolvent trading for company directors back in the 27th of March, and it was meant to end 27 September. However, they then extended it to 31 December. So basically all of 2020, it was to allow businesses to take a review of where they're at and whether they should continue to trade on into the next year. Insolvent trading happens when a company director incurs a debt in their business when they probably should know that they won't be able to repay that debt out of the company's resources. So if decisions are made now to wind up a company, to get a liquidator involved, that may, those laws existing will protect the director for any debts incurred since March. However, if new debts are incurred into 2021, there won't be that protection there. And so a decision really needs to be made. Now, unfortunately, there's sort of a domino effect happening, or we anticipate happening, because the government also has made it very difficult for a business just to get paid by other businesses, by other companies or individuals. Because it used to be that if you gave a person what's called a bankruptcy notice, or if you gave a company a statutory demand, that notice or demand would usually say, unless you pay this debt in 21 days, we can then force you into bankruptcy or liquidation. And usually most people would respond to that and pay their debts. But at the moment, until the end of 2020, if you issue that notice, the notice will say you have 6 months to pay that debt.
True.
So a lot of people have not been issuing the notices, but in January, a lot of notices will be issued that say you must pay the debt in 21 days. So I think we will see a huge domino effect in February next year, where people have been given demands, won't be able to pay them. But if people haven't decided to liquidate or become bankrupt and have continued to press on into 2021, that may not last long. They may be forced into it. So I would encourage people involved in business to see their accountants, see an insolvency practitioner, see a lawyer, to work out, is it really realistic to trade on next year?
Con, is that only business, or what sort of protection does Mr. and Mrs. Average have?
Well, as I say, I mean, Mr. and Mrs. Average are either are sole traders or partnerships.
No, I meant not in business. I meant just,
pardon me.
You work for a boss.
The pressures that may come home is where you've got people who, if they don't have JobKeeper anymore and they don't have a job anymore, of course, any debts they have, they may come under pressure to pay those.
Mm.
And there's not a lot they can do if they don't have the money to pay.
No, but do they have the protection of nothing until next year, or don't they, or doesn't Mr. and Mrs. Average have that protection that the businesses do?
So individuals at the moment have that 6-month demand.
If
somebody gives an individual person, mum and dad, an individual demand, then yes, the 6 months to pay is current, the current law. However, that law will end on the 31st of December. And so if somebody in January starts demanding payment from an individual, they will only have 21 days to pay at that point in time.
Oh, very good. All right, Con, I've just got to take a quick break. I must just make a quick mention. I think in about, it might even be next Wednesday, I've actually got a financial counsellor going to come and talk to us, because some of these things with the housing and all that, those loans have still been collecting interest too, and they have to be paid back at some stage, don't they?
Yes, unfortunately, the pressure will be on to either refinance, which you can only do if you've got an income,
yep,
or sell property. So there'll be a lot of pressure to sell property next year or to refinance the debt against it for those who can refinance.
All right, I just got to have a quick break, Con, and we'll be back with more.
Fall in love. Why does the rain fall in love?
listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 26 minutes to one and we're still on 26 degrees. And if you've got a legal question, you've got about another 10 minutes to either give us a ring on 59615991, 59615991, or info@yarravalleyfm.org.au, and we'll get it answered for you. It's a great opportunity if you've got any. We can't talk about particular cases, but we can certainly talk about the law in general. With this COVID-19, with, you could almost call it a shutdown, if we hadn't have had the technology that we do in 2020, we'd have been really in a bit of trouble. But you were saying, pardon me, that you can go online and do probates and all that sort of stuff now.
Yes, so a lot of lessons have been learned, and a lot of people that had invested in their technology were able to move their businesses almost entirely online. And that's something we were able to do here at Hutchinson Legal, particularly in the last lockdown when we were, you know, shut out of the building, so to speak. And
what, Grant cut you out, did he?
Oh, no. Oh, the government cut us out of the building. But so we were able to do that, and a lot of businesses have done quite well out of it. You know, before I was talking about doom and gloom, but for some businesses, it's been a fantastic time of moving their businesses online and finding new opportunities and new types of business. So, but sometimes in the rush, people move and change, but they forget about the legal side of it. And I always would recommend, of course, to get your terms and conditions checked to make sure that, you know, when you're doing deliveries, that people are obliged to pay and don't just, you get the delivered goods, but then they don't pay and dispute your bill. So everyone should need to revisit how they do business, but also revisit making sure that the contracts will stick and the terms and conditions are suitable for an online type of service provision. So, that's been something good that's come out of it. And many people have had many meetings and Zoom meetings and Microsoft Teams and these kind of things. So it's been a good time for some.
Con, just when you're talking about these online purchases, just do need, well, I know I'm going to ask you, how do you go if you buy something from overseas and it never turns up? Like, the law of Australia can't do much about it, can it?
Yes, unfortunately, the practical answer is you're relying on those providers through which you do the transaction. So I think, a popular example would be eBay or Amazon. But different platforms have different rules, and you're relying on their sort of buyer protection in those circumstances to get a refund. But they have their own procedures for dealing with that. But yes, trying to launch a legal case in Australia probably won't be very effective.
All right, well, look, I'm keen to talk. You were saying that you can now do probate and all that.
Oh, yes, sorry. We got
off the track.
I apologise.
That's all right.
With the move to online, that has forced the courts to do a lot more, provide a lot more services online. And one of those for the Supreme Court is moving the granting of probate to they're calling it a paper light version. So it used to be very intensive with documents and proving signatures and witnesses on wills and the like. But now everyone's worked out an electronic way to do these things. But as I've found, a lot of people are struggling with the technology. And so I always would suggest getting help, because when it comes to seeking grants of probate, we're very experienced in knowing how to anticipate the problems before they become a problem.
That's very nice. Connor, I need to take another quick break, and we'll be back with more.
You're listening to Lawyers, Grapes and Gripes. Naturally, any information you hear on this program is of a general nature only, and so it shouldn't be relied on in your individual circumstances, but rather you should seek individual legal advice. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back to Community Connections on Yarra Valley FM 99.1, the voice of the valley, where it's 15 minutes to one and it's gone up a little bit, 28 degrees. We've hit the top for today and we're expecting late showers this afternoon with a possible storm. But we'll tell you more about that straight after 1 o'clock news. And we have with us Con from Hutchison Legal and we're talking all things legal. Con, we've got a... I'd like to get on to the question that we would like answered next month. I think it's probably a bit of a complex thing that we'd like to know about. So if you've got a pen and paper, we'll give it to you. Now, we've had about four different questions. There was a case only in the last few weeks where a lady, I think she's down Rosebud Way, who took the lockdown to the High Court. Now, I don't want to get involved in whether it was legal or illegal, and I think it was found legal anyway, but I don't want to get into the political side of it. But it prompted a number of questions about the High Court. Now, the first one is, what sort of cases go to the High Court? Could it be a case that started off in the Magistrates Court and go the whole way to the High Court, or is it only ones at a higher court that go to the higher court, the High Court? We need this confirmed, that they don't have a jury. Now, the other thing that they did say, it was a full bench of the High Court. Does that mean every time they have a case in the High Court, it's a full bench? Or is there times when it's not a full bench? The person didn't know what that meant, whether there are times when there are less judges or whatever. Does the High Court only sit on constitutional matters, or can it be just a legal matter? And how do you get a case to the High Court? If you had a case that you thought was something that was mind-blowing, can you just automatically go to the High Court first, or do you have to take it through either the county, the Supreme Court, or some other way to get at the High Court? And the High Court, is that binding on, if whatever they find, is that binding on every state, or is it just on that case that went there? And if it was a case in Victoria, and we'll just say there was a lockdown in every state, and I don't want to get onto the lockdown, but if it was something like that, it was in every state, if it was found to be illegal, would it then be illegal in every state, or would it just be that state that presented that to the courts? So there's quite a lot in that. And as I say, we had different people asking different questions. So it'd be really good if somebody there could really look at the High Court and give us those sorts of answers, please, Con.
You're right, Alan. There's quite a lot in that. And it is fascinating. I think ever since I saw the movie The Castle, I've been fascinated about, taking it to the High Court. It's a memorable scene, seeing them standing outside of the High Court in Canberra.
I guess the other thing is, and hopefully none of us have been there, but I guess we've all got some idea of what the Magistrates Court does. We've all got some idea of the County Court and the Supreme Court. I don't say what we know is completely right, but I mean, we have some concept, but I don't think the average Mr. and Mrs. or Miss or whatever really has had anything to do with the High Court, other than what we hear on when some of these cases are handed down. And it'd be just fascinating. Well, certainly these four people would like have each asked something different, and it's strange that they all came in one after the other, but I think it was because of that case that was heard, and then people are saying, well, what is this High Court? And I don't know. I from my guess or my understanding, a full bench of seven judges, but I mean, what's the minimum judges you can have, and do you have three, four, five, six? I don't know.
Yes, well, we'll definitely look into it. At the risk of not getting the facts right, I, I'll hazard a guess at all of the answers, but I think a full bench is seven judges, but I don't think every sitting of a high court is a full bench. So that's why there's a distinction drawn.
Well, those things. Maybe you've just raised another question then. Why in some cases is there only X amount of judges and some of them have got the seven judges? What distinguishes who should get what?
Yes, we will look into that. The situation something that's been happening in the last few years is where you have the corporations the Corporations Act, and you then have state laws, and then sometimes there's been over the last few years a big difference between the state laws around trusts and the federal law, which is the Corporations Act. And so there's been a number of cases which ended in the High Court. There was a case that ended trying to resolve whether state trust laws apply to corporations, which is a federal law. And that's the kind of case that ends up in the High Court, because sometimes all the legal minds have different opinions on which law should prevail. And at the end of the day, the High Court is the highest legal authority to determine those disputes.
Mm. Well, I'd guess you'd have a look at that if you could. I guess the other thing is too that, we don't know. And that's part of what this show's about is to educate people as well. And when we get questions, we like. So we've got a couple of more minutes. What else would you like to talk about, please, Con?
I haven't got another particular topic. I'm sorry. Covered so much ground in this session today, but I just think, as I said before, I think something that I've said many times is back to those financial pressures, people go to the bank of mum and dad trying to solve their problems, and mum and dad really need to get legal advice about documenting any loans and making sure they get security on real estate. So if mum and dad are going to act like a bank, they should get security like a bank does. And that's very important protection if they're going to lend money to their children to deal with their financial problems.
Because I guess mum and dad always assume that the money's going to just come back and all that, but family relationships do break down, don't they?
Then
all of a sudden you've got a whole lot of problems where you're not going to, unless you do something, you're not going to get your money back. And then I guess the other thing too that you read in the paper too, that some of this can lead to elder abuse, can't it, where parents get threatened almost that they have to loan the young person or the person money.
Yes, and that's very important that you raise that. We are very vigilant to identify and protect people from elder abuse because this psychological pressure, financial pressure on parents to, you must help, you don't love me unless you help me financially. And that's very unfair. And again, that's why I say please come to us to get that advice and get the legal protections before committing any finances. So important. I've dealt with a number of cases where it wasn't well documented and the security wasn't provided. I've seen a terrible loan agreement that just provided no security for mum and dad. And when one of the children went bankrupt, there was a fight between the two sets of in-laws plus the husband and wife were fighting. Everyone was fighting. And unfortunately, there needed to be compromises made because the documentation wasn't done very well. So please, I would ask the listeners to get the advice before committing financially.
And I guess the other thing too that needs to be thought about is that it's all right for mum and dad, or for the young person or whoever they might be, to say, well, mum and dad can give me money. Mum and dad at some stage retire and they need that money.
Correct. And it's very difficult. difficult to get it out if you have to force your child and your son-in-law or daughter-in-law, if you have to force them to sell a property so that you then have the money to move to your transition to retirement. So it creates a lot of tensions. And so, yes, these things need to be thought through and legally documented so that everyone understands what will happen later on.
Yeah, because when these things start off, nobody expects them to go bad, do they?
No, and but that's why lawyers have jobs. Things do go bad, and that's unfortunately we deal with the worst of it. We know that a lot of the time everything goes fine and everything is sweet, and that's great. But unfortunately, there's that percentage of matters where it ends in disputes and acrimony, and it would have been better if lawyers were consulted at the beginning of that process rather than at the end.
And I guess when that sort of stuff goes bad, it goes really bad, doesn't it?
Oh, unfortunately, yes. It leads to relationship breakdowns, family breakdowns, all sorts of terrible things, intervention orders. I'm trying to get out of the doom and gloom, Alan. we want to get back to things. If things are documented well at the beginning, it's better in the long run to avoid all those doom and gloom problems. So, yes.
Well, let's talk. We've only got a couple of minutes left, so let's talk about something really bright. What are you going to do for your holidays at Christmas time, Con?
Oh, I haven't even thought that far ahead. If I can escape metropolitan Melbourne for a little while, that will be fantastic. Out into the countryside, in the fresh air and the big sky, I think that would be something great that I think everyone would like to do. And, of course, getting down to the beach to enjoy some of that summer experience. I think that would be great.
I went down to Rosebud yesterday for the first time in 6 months, and it was fantastic to be able to not only drive down there. Well, I haven't been down there to break the rules, and the first police car, I thought, all of a sudden, I don't have to worry about that now. Well, I've never broken the rules, so I didn't want to break the rules this time.
Yes, well, just make sure you've got your mask with you.
Yes.
Have one in the car and have one that's just easily accessible, because I think that's the only restriction, that you could accidentally break.
And I think they're going to be here for a while in some form or other, maybe not all the time, but I can't see them going away from shopping centres and all that for a while. And that's fine. But we certainly don't want a third wave.
Definitely not. So we are trusting our governments and our health teams to make sure that there isn't a third wave, and that as people are allowed to come back into Australia, that they are carefully managed and the virus is not reintroduced, because, yeah, that would be terrible after everything has been through.
We couldn't.
We hope we get to enjoy the benefits of everything we've been through now, and we don't want that jeopardised again.
And we want a good Christmas.
Oh, yes, I hope everybody finds that, I suppose, really appreciates the value of other people and spending time with other people. And I hope people can reach out to those that are maybe a little bit more isolated and lonely, and really embrace people socially distanced, of course, however we're allowed to embrace people in conversations and in the lead up and at Christmas time. I think that's very important, given the difficult mental struggles people will have gone through during the lockdown.
Con, unfortunately I've got to go, but thank you for your being with us again today, and we look forward to talking to someone from Hutchins Legal same time in it'll be December.
Thanks, Alan. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Colin. Bye.